Wir sind SBS German. Weitere Inhalte finden Sie auf sbs.com.au/German.
Per Video bin ich nun mit Professor Anna Helbig verbunden von der Curtin University in Perth. Ich grüße Sie.
Hallo, guten Tag.
Ihr Name Anna Helbig ist natürlich deutschstämmig. Ich glaube, Ihre Vorfahren waren Barossa-Tal-Deutsche, nicht wahr?
Handorf, which is before Barossa. It was 1840. It was one of the first places settled in outside of Adelaide by Germans.
So. Ja, und Deutsch wurde dann weiter gepflegt. Ich glaube sogar, Ihr Vater hat in Queensland in der deutschen lutherischen Kirche gepredigt. Er war Pastor.
Yes, and with the German Lutheran community there, and which is an old established community. Then we moved down to Wollongong, and Wollongong, which had big steelworks and had many, many new refugees and people coming up from Germany. And my dad looked after them.
Und Sie haben dann aber nicht mehr Deutsch gesprochen? You didn't speak German with your family, with your dad?
Oh, Dad spoke beautiful German, everyone said. Ich habe Deutsch auf der Schule gelernt and in der Kirche. Yeah. We applied the organ. And for church. And we asked my father for help in the evening with our exercises in German. And, you know, 2 hours later, we are still there. So we didn't really pick up a lot of German from my dad. I can understand some understanding you now. We're talking simply and slowly, but and I can read with a good dictionary at my side. But speaking, you know, when you learn really in the old way through the grammar, you don't ever get to make a sense properly.
Gut, dann wollen wir jetzt also über einen deutschen Botaniker sprechen, ein Abenteurer auch, der im 19. Jahrhundert nach Australien kam, Dr. Johann August Ludwig Preiss. Er lebte von 1811 bis 1883. Wie sind Sie auf diesen Mann gestoßen? How did you hear about this quite obscure man?
Well, I was trying to remember, you know, and I think I first started, I was looking back, I first found something in my laptop in 2016 when I first started thinking about him. I've always been interested in botanical things. I've always been interested in the museum. I worked as a curator for a while. I did a wonderful project about the bunya tree. Queensland people will know that iconic tree. And we were looking at a man who visited here called Baron von Hügel. And he was here very briefly. And somehow or other, while I was reading about him, I found this new gem of a research topic and a person to find out about. Hmm.
Woher kam er? Was wissen wir über seine Herkunft?
Where he came from? Yeah, I was very lucky. I was able to go to Germany a couple of times and to visit where he came from. And that was in Herzberg am Harz, near Göttingen. And also he later lived in Hattorf, which was a village nearby. And I was very lucky. I was the second person to go to the village to ask about him. So the archivist took a lot of trouble and did research and found a genealogy of the family. So I could see where he fitted in the family and also took time with me to tell me, help translate his last will and testament or part of it. You know, he's still, even though he died in 1888, you can't look at the person's will.
Und er war der älteste, glaube ich, von 12 Kindern und stammte aus eher einfachen Verhältnissen. Simple family, not upper class or highly intellectual or academic family.
No, not at all. His father was a master saddle maker, but they had a house in the village, a bit of land, and I think the sons were a bit upwardly mobile. Germany had a very good education system, and so young kids went and they learned how to, like, actually things we're trying still to do today, to think and work things out for themselves, to have the skills when they finished their education. And they did science and languages as well. So he came out of that He must have gone to primary, secondary, and then he ended up at university. And that wasn't unusual in those days for people from that background. I don't know if people listening know the Ludwig Leichhardt, who was a famous explorer who was lost in the desert, and people have been trying to find him. In 1848, people are still looking for him. So he was around the same time, and he also had the same sort of background and coming up through the education system. So I think that the family also, one of the cousins ran a little newspaper, and also someone later on helped set up a branch of the Esperanto Society in this little village. And I'm not sure why, but I guess they were very suggested outward-looking person, looking interested in other cultures. And they were the people, that was my first contact in the village. I was looking for how to get in there. And when I got there, they welcomed me, Esperanto Society. I was their special guest for a few days.
Wir sprechen mit Professorin Anna Hebich von der Curtin University in Perth. Sie ist Expertin für australische Geschichte, für Kultur- und Umweltgeschichte. Und sie hat einen Artikel geschrieben am letzten Freitag in The Conversation, The Forgotten German Botanist Who Took 200.000 Australian Plants to Europe. Und wir haben gehört, das ist ein gewisser Dr. Johann August Ludwig Preiss. Er lebte von 1811 bis 1883 und kam dann 1838 nach Australien im Alter von 36 oder 37 Jahren. Wie kam er dazu? How did he get to Australia?
Well, at some stage he was living in Hamburg, and he did what was called like a doctorate, but it's not a doctorate like we do now at university. It was a much more simple research project. And his mentor and supervisor was Professor Lehmann. He was a botanical person in the city. And there was a sort of a bit of a buzz going on about the flora and fauna in Western Australia that was sort of known, particularly in Britain, because it was a British colony. And so Professor Lehmann had this feeling that this would be a good place to send a collector out to. And he must have had a sense that of how good young Ludwig Preiss was and how committed he would be to collecting and how well he would care for and curate the plants that he collected.
Und das war natürlich eine völlig neue Welt, nicht wahr? Also das waren Pflanzen, die man halt nicht kannte in Deutschland, in Europa. Und das muss gewiss ganz komisch gewesen sein für ihn. It must have been very strange for this German botanist to come to Australia in 1838, let alone to Perth, which in those days would have been what? A tiny settlement.
Perth, yeah, the colony was only 8 years old. And so when he came here, it was a dusty, it was the middle of summer, it was Christmas time. And it was a sort of swampy area originally, but it was also dusty and dry by that time. And would have been very hot, and he would have found the landscape and the plants and vegetation very unusual and strange, I'm sure. We have a note from Baron von Hügel. When he arrived, he said, "Oh, it's so dull. What can I look for here?" Even though he actually had plants in his own place. Some people had plants in Europe already from here. And he went collecting, and when he got into the bush, he saw it was very beautiful. And he picked a beautiful bunch of flowers.
Wie wurde hier aufgenommen? Als Freund, als Feind? How was he perceived by the local botanists, for that matter?
Well, by everyone, probably. This is very British and very parochial. And these were people who were living on the edge, like mentally, because the land wasn't very good. They're having a lot of trouble getting farms, and they were worried about the Aboriginal people. And then there was nowhere until South Africa. And then, then it was all the way, they were just so isolated. And so they didn't take kindly to new people like Price. And so the botanists particularly were not very helpful. The chief botanist here was John Drummond. He wrote to the man he collected for in London and said, "This man is collecting for the Russians and the Germans, and he's not doing things for Britain. He's not British, and so like beware, don't take his specimens, because it's well known that Price's specimens were much, much better prepared and cared for than any of the other botanists, including Drummond. He liked to go out on his horse and pick things up and then go back home, and he didn't really care much about preparing them to send them back to Britain. And of course, that was important that they were cared for, because otherwise they just ended up as a mess of rotting plants when they got there, or seeds.
Sie sagen oder schreiben, dass er auch sehr unkonventionelle Transportmittel zur Verfügung hatte, nämlich gar keine, nur seine eigenen Füße. He didn't have a horse.
This is what my understanding. There's no mention of him riding around on a horse, and perhaps he did have some money, he was quite well funded, but perhaps he got a horse. I think he walked, and I think because he would have walked back in the Harz Mountains, he would have been used to that. It was a good way to collect. A lot of collectors now, they walk, and when you Drummond brought out a horse, Price was walking, and I think that's a really powerful way to get to know the new flora and fauna. He's looking, he's walking with it, and he's all the senses are involved. He's right with it.
Ihre Community, Ihre Meinung. SBS German.
SBS Radio am Mittwochabend mit einem Gesprächsgast. Per Video bin ich verbunden mit Professorin Anna Hebich von der Curtin University in Perth. Sie ist ein John Curtin Distinguished Professor und Expertin unter anderem für Umweltgeschichte. Dieser Johann August Ludwig Preiss war überhaupt ein ziemlich unkonventioneller Mann. Er hatte eigentlich hier auch gar keine Familie, so viel man weiß. Er war ein bisschen ein Einsiedler. He was a bit of a loner.
He was, and I don't know that he made many friends here. There's mention of a couple of people who also were outsiders in the colony. I don't know that he had much to do with Aboriginal people. There's only one mention of him having been collecting with an Aboriginal woman who was helping him. Well, I think that's what interested in me and him. He was a bit of a mystery, and he sounded like a bit of a new modern man, in the 19th century, not the old-fashioned collector like the rest of them. He was out there, and someone suggested to me that he may have been a sort of, romantic sensibility of the period. I don't think so. I think he was just really passionate about botany and collecting, and he thought he could improve his status in the world through that too.
Genau, das wollte ich fragen. Also, warum hat er das eigentlich gemacht? Why did he do this? I mean, he was for 4 years in Western Australia in very harsh surroundings.
Well, he did it because he could, because he was sent here and he had the money to live and to support himself. But it was a passion. There was a passion, first of all, generally about botany, botanizing. There was a new technology for transporting things, like the Wardian case. It kept plants alive. There were It was also particularly for the British, not for him, but it was something to do with the empire, to be able to take something of the empire back. For him, it was about science, I'm sure. And there was in science, all Germans know about Alexander von Humboldt, his travels around the world collecting. There was a passion to in all of Europe, in Europe and in Britain, to sort of collect and classify and name everything in the world. That was really a sort of an ambition. And he was collecting everything, not just plants. He collected animals and minerals and shells and all sorts of things that he took back.
Die Tiere wurden die Leben zurückgenommen? Nee, wohl kaum. The animals, they would have been brought back as stuffed animals, wouldn't they? Not alive.
Yeah, no, nothing was, he didn't take anything back alive. He made maybe a few plants, but no, they weren't they weren't hopping around on the ship, the kangaroos. I hadn't really realized that he was also really a taxonomist, I suppose. He was keeping them, birds as well. I saw a collection of his birds in the Natural History Museum in Berlin, and sadly some of them had been in the bombing in the Second World War, and as the curator said to me, they sort of flew out the window with the bombing and sort of landed, and the curators had to put them together, and some of them had wings out of place and not too well still, but he was collecting fungi and all sorts of things. He was collecting everything that was in forest and the bush, even the sea, fish as well.
Und 200.000 dieser Exemplare, also Pflanzen allein, und dazu kamen dann die Fauna, hat er also nach Europa zurückgebracht. Sie haben vorhin den Wardian Case erwähnt, eine ganz neue Technologie. Auf Deutsch würde man das, glaube ich, als Mini-Gewächshaus übersetzen. Warum war das so wichtig? Why was the Wardian Case so important, the invention of it?
Yeah, because that was for transporting live plants, and it just kept them alive. It was an enclosed environment, and you give them water, and they were glass, so the light went in. So when on the ship, they'd be up above, it wasn't too hot, and they could just be transported as a living plant, as if it was back in the garden, you know. So and most of them survived. He sent most of his things back in the tin cases because they weren't living plants. But, you know, think of the distance between here and Britain, which was the main destination, and how long can a plant live on a boat, a ship? You know, it's a very long trip.
Das finde ich hochinteressant. Also diese Mini-Gewächshäuser, die waren ja, wie Sie sagten, aus Glas, und damit musste man den Pflanzen kein kostbares Trinkwasser geben. Man konnte quasi mit der Kondensation der Feuchtigkeit im Glaskasten selbst diese Pflanze monatelang wahrscheinlich am Leben halten.
Yes, exactly. And that was a very important technological advance in botanizing in the 19th century. You can buy them on eBay.
Ihre Community, Ihre Meinung. SBS German.
Ein letzter Gesprächsblock mit Professorin Anna Hebig von der Curtin University in Perth. Es geht um einen Artikel, den sie geschrieben hat in The Conversation am letzten Freitag, 24. Juli. The Forgotten German Botanist Who Took 200.000 Australian Plants to Europe. Die Rede ist von Dr. Johann August Ludwig Preis. Er lebte von 1811 bis 1883 und verbrachte 4 lange Jahre in Westaustralien, 1838 bis 1842. Und wenn ich das richtig verstanden habe, hat er dann gegen Schluss seines Aufenthalts hier in Australien die britische Staatsbürgerschaft beantragt.
Oh, to be a British subject. Yes, he made quite a lot of enemies here, but didn't make any difference to him. He decided he wanted to live here. And I think part of it to be a British subject, you could get land. So a lot of land around here was being taken from Aboriginal people and taken up by the colonists. And so he had an idea that he could sell his collection to the British government, and he really praised it up as well. He wasn't a modest sort of person about his collection, and he wanted to sell it for a certain amount of money, and then he thought that would finance his trip back to Germany, also to do some more exploring up north, and then he would bring back a whole lot of young families from I think along the Rhine area to be in a little immigration scheme to settle here in Perth. And by bringing labour back, which was scarce here, he would get some more land. So it was like he could see a way to improve things for himself here that he probably couldn't see would happen back in Germany.
Und für mich erstaunlich, er hat diese Staatsbürgerschaft dann auch tatsächlich bekommen. He actually received the citizenship.
Yes, he said, I think he also mentioned that he lived near Hanover and a sort of the British connection between Germany and, you know, the royal family and all those things. And he finally got it. It was about 3 years later because the bill, I think, you know, the documents had to go back to Britain to be signed and back again. And so it took a long time. And just about that time, he was going back to England. And then to Germany, yep.
Und er ist dann aber dort geblieben. Warum? Wissen wir das?
Sorry, what?
Do we know why he did stay then in Europe, why he did not come back to Australia a second time?
Yes, well, he just had a terrible run of bad luck first. So he had all of these specimens, and he had a sort of a system where people had invested in specimens in his trip, and then he was to they'd choose the specimens that they wanted back, and it all fell through. He also had an arrangement with Professor Lehmann that in Hamburg they would have there would be a new natural history museum, and much of his collection would go there. But just before he arrived, there is this it's called the Great Fire of Hamburg in 1842, and he had to give up his great dream. So he was trying to sell his collection, all sorts of advertisements that we found and letters to institutions that we've seen, and didn't make much headway there. And in the end, he was very lucky because Lehmann was able to pull together a number of botanists in Germany who looked at the plants, and they created the first major volume of our reference about plants in Western Australia. So that was a big thing, and it was called Planta Prussiana, so it was named for him. So he kept his name in the world of botany. But I'm not too sure what happened. We were reading through the letters in the museum, and we suddenly just read this out, and I read it to the people. I said, listen to this. Price says, I have to leave. My father said I must come back to Herzberg. So I'm leaving. You send all my mail to there from now on. That's it. He sort of just went off the screen. There's a few letters from him, still writing, trying to get money, but he disappeared. I found that very interesting and mysterious. Fascinating to think about.
Absolut, ein spannendes, faszinierendes Thema. Und ja, das kommt alles in Ihrem Artikel wunderbar zum Ausdruck. Den kann man nachlesen bei theconversation.com. The Forgotten German Botanist Who Took 200,000 Australian Plants to Europe, Dr. Johann August Ludwig Preiss, 1811 bis 1883. Und wir haben gehört, er lebte von 1838 bis 1842 in Westaustralien, als Perth noch eine staubige Siedlung war, wie Sie beschrieben haben. Wirklich ein spannendes Thema. Vielen, vielen Dank, Anna Hebig.
Liken, teilen und kommentieren Sie unsere Inhalte bei facebook.com/sbsgermany.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.